Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. If you enjoy binge-watching the best TV shows and love hearing from the actors and showrunners who make them happen, then subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our Hollywood reporters take you behind the scenes of the year's most anticipated projects, the industry's biggest moves, and the hardest-fought awards races. From The Crown to The Real Housewives, we've got the inside scoop. As a special thank you to our still-watching audience, we're offering 15% off a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair. Visit vanityfair.com today and use promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15 for 15% off a yearly digital subscription to everything you want.
Bring yourself back online.
No one knows what I'm thinking.
Tell us what you think of your world.
This is just a cheap trick.
Some people choose to see the ugliness in this world. The disarray. I choose to see the beauty.
Hello and welcome back to Still Watching Westworld. I'm Vanity Fair senior writer Joanna Robinson.
And I'm Vanity Fair chief critic Richard Lawson.
We are here today to talk about Season 3, Episode 4 of Westworld called The Mother of Exiles. If you are just joining us for the first time on Still Watching, what Richard and I do is watch one TV show sort of obsessively. Well, it's not the only show we're watching. We watch plenty of things, but this is the one we've chosen to discuss right here and right now, Westworld. We are not going to spoil anything that happens in a future episode. Point of fact, Richard and I have not seen any other episodes of Westworld. We are all caught up with you, our listeners, so... here we are in the dark, groping around.
Our loop has ended, like, or whatever.
we're like William, yeah. Just sort of shooting at mirrors in our mansion. So there you go. This is an episode with a big reveal to it. We find out like who all of Dolores's agents in the field are. They are, well, except for one, they're still a mystery, but the other ones are all Dolores. So that's like the big thing that happens this episode. Richard, do you have any thoughts off the bat about that reveal?
It's one of those things where you see like a sci-fi movie with like an omniscient being who, you know, I guess I'm thinking of Dr. Manhattan in Watchmen, the recent HBO series. And I guess the comic books too, probably, but like where he's like, I'm experiencing the future and the past all at the same time. Like, you know, my consciousness contains, you know, is like multidimensional or whatever. I feel like do all of these Dolores bots share a kind of hive consciousness where they can see what all the others are doing at any given time? Or is it like different recordings of Dolores, you know what I mean? Like everything up to a point is the same, and then everything after that point is different. You know what I mean?
Interesting. I think the implication, like if we look back at episode 3, which was the Charlotte Hale focused episode, knowing what we know now, knowing that it's Dolores inside there, then I think my interpretation of that, like, first scene where we see her like sort of waking up and being confused and her progression through the episode to the point where she like throttles a pedophile is sort of like watching a more innocent Dolores, sort of like Rancher's Daughter Dolores, like progress to predator within the arc of one episode versus over the course of season one, which is what we watched Evan Rachel Wood do. Does that make sense? So yeah. It's sort of mm-hmm. like she was like newborn Dolores and then became like advanced Dolores.
So they are all Dolores spirit, but they are different consciousnesses in their current forms, right?
I don't think, they're not like a hive mind, because we've watched Dolores like she gives them command, like Dolores Prime is what I've decided right. I want to call her. We've watched her like give commands to like Charlotte and Connells and stuff like that, who have Dolores consciousnesses inside of them. So I think what we are going to see, what I anticipate we're going to see, is like the Charlotte version of Dolores, like because of her connection to this kid maybe or something like that, have, you know, emerge with a different view of humanity than Dolores Prime You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Because experience informs sort of where you land.
And the interesting thing about that then, potentially going forward, is we could get to a point where one Dolores disagrees with the other Dolores, and then it's Dolores on Dolores on Dolores melee. Maybe that's where this season's headed.
I would love that. A, like, Kill Bill melee, but with all Dolores's.
Yeah.
That would be great. I mean, like, the Charlotte version of, like, Musashi, who shows up at the end of this episode, and Connells, who both have Dolores inside of them, are not really, like, characters so far, at least. You know what I mean? But the Charlotte version of Dolores, given what we saw in episode 3, and even, like, some of the stuff in this episode, like, that feels more like a character with her own growth. The other two feel like sort of dutiful soldiers,
right?
And then the Charlotte one is the wild card because of this, like, experience she's having as a mother here. All right, so if you we are going to get into all of this in a little bit more detail, but first I want to, like, hit some emails that you guys sent us. You can always email us stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. this first email comes from Kyle. He's the title of his email is "The Divergence Was Love." And he says, "You two joked last week that Sirach detected a divergence that he assumes it's Dolores, but maybe it's love. And I got a good laugh from that comment at the time, but I kind of think that might be right. Love is a force that defies Roboam's algorithms. Arnold and Dolores, Maeve and her daughter, Dolores and Caleb, ? The more I watch the Sirach scene in episode 2, the more it seems he's just asserting that it's Dolores, and that's just an assumption. It seems like it's setting us up for it to either be Bernard or something like love. We shall see. Regarding this week's episode, so episode 3, totally agree that it's not telling us who's in Charlotte's body is such a frustrating choice. Maybe you two knew something about future episodes, but I'm withholding judgment on the Charlotte motherhood softening because maybe the parent-child element is very relevant to the entity in Charlotte's body, and Charlotte's son is necessary for that plot to work. I feel like Abernathy is the only option that makes sense. So I don't know. So that's from Kyle. I don't know how Kyle feels now that he knows that it's Dolores inside Charlotte's body, but this idea that, like, the show, I get really distrustful anytime Westworld seems to be very obviously pointing in one direction, because then I'm, like, waiting for them to be like, JK, it was something else. And so I agree with him that, like, Sirach saying very confidently that, like, there's a divergence here, or, like, here's the divergence here in this house 3 months ago, which is what he says to Maeve in this episode, episode 4. Our assumption is that he's talking about Dolores, but I kind of like the idea of it. Maybe it's the Charlotte thing waking up, or maybe it's the Bernard sort of thing. Like, there are some wild card options on the table that are not Dolores there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, there was a flash in this episode of Bernard remembering Arnold's son or
right,
child.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, like, mm-hmm. that whole past stuff is not dead. It's still in play, just as it is for Maeve and anyone else.
Yeah. It's interesting to me. And like, okay, so based on that, we got this email from Janessa. She writes, Bernard's Pearl. Did I see something that was not there, or did I miss it being talked about on the podcast? But Dolores, when she was waking up, quote unquote, Charlotte, there were a bunch of pearls on the table, and the one she put into the computer was Bernard. So if she has Bernard, who is Bernard? If it's the Bernard we have seen, are there two different time realities? The show never ceases to confuse me. So I think what Janessa's missing there, maybe, is that that was like a flashback. That was like before Dolores printed a Bernard body. She had the pearl. But something we maybe didn't talk about last week is that, you know, when she, in episode 3, when she lays those pearls out on the table, the one for Bernard is a mixture of colors. It's gray and red, and the red pearl is for human consciousness, and the gray pearl is for host consciousness. So the fact that Bernard has, like, a swirly one inside of his head means exactly what you're saying, Richard, that he's part Arnold, part Bernard. It's sort of like a confusing,
right,
a hybrid.
And and we see this this kind of narrative construction again in this episode, where we go back to the moment when all these people were created in the real world in this house in Singapore, and so it just ties to the season finale from last season, right? Like, in theory, she's having these conversations, and then going downstairs, talking to Bernard, and then walking out of the house, and that's how season two ends, right?
Right. That she's having a conversation with Charlotte. Yeah, she wakes up the Charlotte bot, and then she makes the Bernard.
Right.
And then they go downstairs because the Charlotte bot was down there, right? And then walk out of the house. Yeah, that's a sequence. So we're watching like sort of season two ending material. All right, so something I want to bring up this email that we got from this listener, Ryan, because I think so. What you you and I, when we pick these seasons of television to talk about, we obviously always want to pick seasons of television that we are extremely excited to talk about, right? And I you know, despite the fact that we're like a little down on the season, I think there's still enough like Westworld is always like doing something interesting, even if it's always not doing something I'm like particularly delighted that it's doing, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I don't have regrets around us picking Westworld, but just so people know, like, we pick these things in advance and we don't know how it's going to shake out, and obviously we would prefer to talk about a show that we are like over the moon about. That's more fun for us to talk about. But you know, we're somewhere, for me at least, I'm somewhere in the middle here with Westworld season three. And so Ryan wrote in an email that goes, "Stop wanting, quote unquote, an actual television show that makes sense, you elites." And then he wrote, "Okay, but seriously, I love both of y'all and I completely understand your criticisms on stuff like, oh, it sucks to not understand what Tessa Thompson is doing and I don't know what the hell is going on. Like, yes, okay, no, that doesn't make sense, but, and it's probably bad writing, but who cares? It's Westworld. I'm being flippant, but I also do think it's important to take into account both Nolan's love of nonlinear storytelling and Lisa Joy's background with poetry. Yes, in a movie form, it's more satisfying to have these questions answered, but I think for the past two seasons, at least, Lisa Joy and Jonah Nolan have been very purposely taking away those answers, and I think instead of fighting that and wanting more information, I found myself simply going along with those choices and focusing on the narrative arcs they're trying to tell. I don't even know who Dolores is at this point. Like, are we watching Wyatt? But I'm still quite emotionally engaged with whoever is being currently embodied in Evan Rachel Wood's performance, likewise for Tessa Thompson's character. Isn't it more interesting to pose the questions as to why they make the available information of these characters so heavily tied to context in the situations they find themselves, not based on who they are or were or human egocentric notions of self? I find it more fun to see if they're playing with ideas about what we cinematically accept as real, and what that tells us about what we find real. Like, if all three of these storylines are a simulation, I don't know if that's my favorite option right now, but I don't watch Westworld to find emotional resonance. I guess I watch Westworld to be confused and see weird shit and not understand what's going on. If I start being able to follow what the hell is happening, then they're selling out, in my opinion. Hope you're staying safe. Thanks for the pod." So, you know, Ryan has found an approach to Westworld that works for him. Richard, do you have any thoughts about, like, what we might let go of expectations-wise or how we might reframe the discussion, or if we need to at all?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we're looking at this thing from a different angle than someone else is, and so on and so on, you know, and our particular angle happens to be one of coverage. I had to watch the first four episodes to review it, and then we're doing this podcast week to week. I mean, no one's holding a gun to our head, obviously. We opted into this. But I think, but like the way in which we watch the show to kind of creates a different need for things than more casually watching it or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And so if it sounds like we're being too hard or asking too much of a series that, you know, at its best is just elusive and beautiful to look at and offers some compelling ideas about technology and the future and all that, it's because I think that you and I are hungry for, like, data points with which to kind of, you know, to kind of grab onto to talk about, you know? So I think if anything, we could be a little bit more aware of you know, obviously attending to our needs from the show, but also, like, maybe not stating them so plainly. I guess we could sort of more blend it into the general appreciation of the show.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray. We're culture writers, podcasters, and hosts of the show Love to See It.
Every week, we give an unapologetically feminist dissection of reality dating shows, rom-coms, and other romance narratives. We unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
And we dive into all the details with special guests like actors, authors, and cultural critics.
You can find Love to See It wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop every Tuesday.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I appreciate that Ryan was like, this is my approach. Because, you know, there's definitely people who get are a little less kind when our opinion does not align with theirs. So I appreciate that Ryan's just like, hey, this is what I found works for me watching Westworld. I think for me, when I watch a show, any show, I need that emotional investment. And I know that's not true for every person. Like, some people just love to watch like the spectacle of something, or some people just love a puzzle box, or whatever the case may be. And I just feel the need to emotionally attach. And that's something that we talked about in last week in terms of like what works twist wise in TV and film. And for me, it's like an emotional payoff that comes with the sort of logic payoff. And in season one, I felt that with the William arc, like the idea that Jimmy Simpson and Ed Harris are playing the same character, that carries an emotional weight to me that I find really interesting. A tragic, like, emotional weight to me. And, you know, knowing that last week Tessa Thompson was doing Dolores, but not knowing that at the time, that revelation doesn't carry any sort of emotional impact for me in the rear view. And that's something I need, and it's not something everyone needs as a TV viewer. So, all right. Well, thank you for your emails. Please continue to email us, stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. Love your theories, love your thoughts, love your feedback. As we journey into the mystery, because we have a lot of questions. Like, we don't know who this final host is that Dolores 3D printed out of some white goop. Do you feel like offering a theory, Richard? How do you feel about that?
Oh, I mean, I couldn't even begin to guess, which I guess is fun, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure there are fan theories out there because because she took five, right? And four are accounted for.
Right. So we've got, Connell's.
Yeah.
Musashi. Yeah. Charlotte
and Arnold
and Bernard.
I would assume and I would hope that they are holding out for something really shocking and cool in terms of a reveal, but I don't know. Do you have a theory? Are there theories out there?
I'm sure there are plenty of theories out there. I think, you know, one could wonder, is it William? Like, cause, you know, the whole thing in this episode is William is still in the midst of his, like, spiraling, am I a host or am I a human thing? So, like, you know, could it be William? But my answer to that is if it were William, then that would be a red pearl, not a gray pearl. I think it would be most, I can't think of any host, non-Dolores host, that would be satisfying. So let's assume it's Dolores's pearl. So then it's just the body that would be satisfying to us. So whose body do we want to see? I mean, okay, a couple options. Dolores could make something that could really mess with William, right? So, is it Emily? Does it look like Emily? Does it look like, his wife, Juliet? Like, you know, something like that. Or does it look like young William? So it's Jimmy Simpson. Like, would that mess with him? Like, what, you know, how could she mess with him the best? So that's one option. excuse me. Another option is, you know, the two other sort of antagonist factors that she has here. One is Bernard and one is Maeve. And we saw, like, the choice to use Musashi seems like it was targeted to sort of disarm Maeve, mm-hmm, in a way, mm-hmm, right? Because she has a personal connection with that character. So, like, is there another person who could disarm Maeve in that way? And, like, my best guess in that regard would be someone who looks like Clementine, maybe,
yeah,
or Hector, even.
Yeah.
And then for Bernard, you know, there's there's a few options, I guess. Like, they wouldn't do his son because they can't, because it's been like 5 years since they filmed season one of Westworld. But maybe they could do like Elsie, Shannon Woodward's character, or something like that. But my main guess would be Clementine. My secret hope, even though it doesn't necessarily make sense, is that it's for some reason Ben Barnes. Like, what, yeah, if it's Ben Barnes? That would be really fun. Yeah.
Oh, I did write an episode of this season, so you'll see.
the Logan episode? Can't wait. Yeah. Can't wait for it. But yeah, I mean, it seems like, though, she doesn't, the question of, like, messing with William doesn't really seem that urgent to her, because she has, you know, at the end of the episode, the Charlotte sort of version of Dolores kneels down and injects something into him. I don't know what she did, but, like, some sort of dark material into his neck. Which seemed to me to be related to some of the delusions he was having at the end of this episode, though he's been having delusions throughout the episode, so I don't know why she needed to do that. But something has been put inside his body, and so it makes me feel like they don't need any kind of, like, host body to mess with William. He's doing fine on his own that way.
Yeah, no, he's pretty squared away, I think.
So what did you think of this? So this is, Ed Harris was... like Anthony Hopkins and Ed Harris were like two of the biggest, like, features of the first season. You know, Anthony Hopkins was back for, like, basically essentially a cameo in season two, and may or may not be in the season at all. I would guess not. This is the first Ed Harris episode of the season. Mm-hmm. Episode four, mm-hmm, is our first Ed Harris episode. So, you know, what is it like to have him back? And does the show miss him when he's gone? Does it need William at the center of it?
I don't think so. I think we got everything out of that character that we needed to in two seasons, you know, that mm-hmm, this was someone who, you know, dove into a project that was a bit, you know, ungodly and had terrible implications, and then got swallowed by it, you know. And we've seen that narrative before. I think it's effectively done in the previous two seasons and in this episode. Tormented by mistakes, you know, watching as the thing, you know, declares him insane and has him carted off, and he completely loses control over it for good. I feel like his portion of whatever grand allegory Westworld is doing has kind of concluded in a way.
Yeah, and to that end, I'm curious what he's even doing here. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like he's back where he was in the last, like, couple episodes of season two, which is this, like, I killed my daughter, am I real, am I not? So, like, we have not moved out of that tailspin that he's in.
Yeah, and I think that, like, that's why at the end, when she says welcome to the end of the game, that's his punishment. That's where he has to live with, you know, that like, unknowingness until he dies. If he does die, maybe he is in a robot body, who knows? But, like, I think that, like, her final punishment to him is to put him in his own loop, you know, right. And his loop is just, like, agony and grief and guilt and kind of the madness of not knowing if he is who he is.
And what's most, you know, to go back to that idea of emotional satisfaction, what's most emotionally satisfying to me is the idea that he is human.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm, him being a host is not very interesting to me.
No. Because it wouldn't mean anything, really.
Exactly. But him being a human who has been so infected by his own uncertainty that he did this like awful thing and murdered his daughter tragically, and now is stuck forever in a hell of his own making, wondering if he's real or not. That's much more interesting than, you know, I suppose something Dolores could do, because, you know, Dolores can do it all, is put his consciousness in a robot body. So that torment, that looping torment, is something that goes on literally forever. You know what I mean? And that was sort of the implication of the end of credit sequence at the end of season two, where William is in the like forge and Emily's there and she says, you know, he's been there for a very, very long time. The question this episode inserts into the whole thing is, was that just a delusion? Like all of his Emily based delusions in this episode, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing about it, like if it was a consciousness that was uploaded or whatever, like that's not exactly him then, you know? It's right. A version of that might believe it's that thing, but if that was the case, then Dolores is almost punishing something else and not the actual person. And
right, which is just not as satisfying to me.
To assume character motivations of a fake person or fake robot or whatever, but like I just don't think that's a Dolores thing to do. You know, I think she keenly understands that difference and wants to get it right in terms of vengeance.
So, speaking of vengeance, Maeve is on a journey in this episode. She spends more time with Ciroc. We find out that Paris is gone.
Because of seemingly Paris. Some sort of epidemic.
Well, yeah, I like couldn't tell if it was like an epidemic or like a nuclear bomb. There were definitely hazmat suits involved, so that's good.
And a dead deer who maybe died of the
got it.
It felt like the fallout of a disease, you know. But this is all speculative fiction. The real world could never be laid low by something like that, so we shouldn't worry about it. But that would never happen in the real world. So that was like a totally not depressing, scary thing to see.
It's fine. Everything's fine. So Paris is gone. Paris is burnt.
Forget Paris, as Billy Crystal once said.
Yep. and Deborah Winger. Yes, Billy Crystal and Deborah Winger said that. They have this, lovely meal. They go, they interrogate someone. Ciroc shoots him. Great stuff. Love to see it. And then Maeve goes on this little quest. She goes on this quest. She meets this character called the Mortician. And then she goes to find the head of this, like, Yakuza operation. And lo and behold, it's Musashi. But it's actually Dolores. And then they have this fight.
And the Yakuza apparently either manufacturing or hoarding, robot goo.
Yeah, so that's so funny. Because, like, that's something I feel so dumb. Because someone else... suggested that to me, and I like it didn't even occur to me. Like I just assumed, okay, because Musashi's going by the name Sato in his like mm-hmm. Yakuza disguise, and Sato is the name of a kind of like rice beer that's made from like sticky, like glutinous rice goop. So I was like, oh, it's just rice goop. And then someone's like, no, that's host goop. And I was like, because I knew that was like the imagery they were going for, but I thought it was just like. Anyway, I think you're right. You're the second person to bring that up to me, so I'm sure it's right, and I just like missed it. But anyway, they seem to be like manufacturing, bootlegging, smuggling, perhaps host goop. So perhaps for a big army plan that Dolores has,
right? And the question is, was the Yakuza doing that already? And then Dolores just kind of took over the operation, or did Sato Dolores decide to make the Yakuza do that? Either way, it seems to confirm, which I think had been something of a question mark, if she was in fact planning to build an army, you know? And it seems, yes, that is indeed what is happening.
The question is, like, what's going to be inside that army? Is it just like an army of Dolores's? Or are these goops, is the goop for, you know, she talks, the Musashi figure says to Maeve, there's room for everyone in this new world we're building, for your daughter, for et cetera. So, like, because she stored all these consciousness to the Valley Beyond, right? Like, mm-hmm. Dolores is the key to Robot Heaven, where all the, you know, Teddy's there, Maeve's daughter's there, blah, blah, blah. I thought they were, like, gone for good. But perhaps Dolores' plan is to download them and put them in fresh goop that she is smuggling out of Japan. I don't think that Yakuza was doing that before. I feel like the implication, if that is indeed goop, is that it's like at Musashi's sort of insistence that they're doing it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
What do you make of like what? So like he stabs Maeve. And then he's, like, kneeling over her, and he looks like he's going to, like, cut the back of her head open and maybe, like, take her pearl, and then, like, doesn't because Serac's men are there. That seems to me to be, like, I don't understand that move on Dolores' part. Like, if she literally doesn't have time, she literally doesn't have time. But, like, why don't you just scoop up the Maeve body and take it? Like, if the pearl is important to you, if you don't want Maeve to be controlled by Serac, then why not just, like, scoop up the Maeve corpse and run or something like that? Like, to leave her there means that Serac can just, like, revive her, right? In theory?
Right.
So, like, yeah. That didn't make a lot of sense to me. All right. So, and, you know, this is all terribly stylish, like, the fight between Maeve and Musashi and the other Yakuza is, you know, some fun Westworld stuff, some fun stuff for Tandy Newton to do, so... the mortician stuff is less like that. Just felt like I'm like, what are we doing? Where are we going? What's happening? Sort of thing. But once Musashi shows up, that's like, that's fun. And I liked the way the revelation happens across all the different plot lines. Like, as much as I don't love this Dolores reveal, I do like the way that it was done. Like, almost like dominoes falling across the various plot lines. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. No. Exactly. The script synced up well that way. You know, that was clever. You know, I'm glad that each of them didn't say Dolores. You know, we got that once, but if all three had done it, that would have been a bit silly. But it was a good moment, and it felt like you know, like old Westworld. It felt like a kind of poetic grand convergence sort of moment.
Can I tell you about this Easter egg I found that I'm really proud of?
Yes, please.
I need my little pleasures. So the place where they have, where the Yakuza is, I guess, smuggling goop, there's a sign and it says Itai Doshin Distillery. Please forgive my Japanese accent or lack thereof. Itai Doshin, it's printed as one word, but it's a two-word Buddhist concept, Itai Doshin, which means to be of the same mind, even though we are many in body. So that's, that's a little like, it's all Dolores's mind, mm-hmm. even though it's in different bodies, sort of like Easter egg. And I think
I like that.
That was pretty cool that they put that in there. That's a really fun. I'm like, yeah, Westworld, you're fun. You have fun. All right, so then the other plot, we talked about William and Charlotte, we talked about Maeve. The other main plot is Caleb and Dolores and Bernard and Stubbs and how they all sort of collide at this, prostitution auction for charity, over wanting to grab hold of John Gallagher Jr., who doesn't. So this also felt like old school Westworld to me, which is sort of Dolores's point where she was like, I've been told your world is so different, but it's exactly the same as mine. And we get this like, you know, debauched thing that could come out of like any of the stuff that we've seen in the outer fringes of the various parks. So what did you think of this party sequence and everything that happens there?
I mean, I thought the party sequence was interesting. I like that the show has a pretty strong, like, thematic conviction that that wealth in the future is like a complete horror show, you know, like, not that it isn't now, but like that these people have just completely, like, morality has atrophied and it's all just like new synthetic drugs and, you know, supposedly classy events or whatever that are just kind of like sad in a way. You know, and I think that John Gallagher's character is interesting in that, like, we're not rooting for him, but he's not a villain. He's just kind of like one of these people, you know, who's, you know, kind of an asshole and, you know, whatever, kind of feckless. And I think that something I was confused about, though, is later in this whole sequence when, you know, John Gallagher Jr.'s character runs away and then is caught again by Caleb and Dolores. Why let him go before? You know, I think I was a little confused about the strategy there.
I don't think they let him go. Like, Bernard, basically, Bernard and Stubbs have him because Bernard mistakenly thinks that he's a host, right? That she's replaced Liam instead of Connell's, right? So Bernard has him.
Right.
And then Connells comes out
and tells him to run. That's what I was confused about.
Well, he tells him to run, but like he knows Caleb is right there, and he just wants to deal with Bernard.
I see, right? And not clue him in that there are robots. Yeah,
right. Exactly. So like you run off. Yeah, and I mean that's the other thing is like Caleb and Liam Dempsey Jr. are witnessing a lot of stuff. I mean, I guess Richard. Since you and I don't think that extremely lifelike robots exist, we would not be suspicious necessarily of like, but like in a world where Westworld exists, because Liam Dempsey Jr. has been to Westworld, you know what I mean? And like, why are people not more suspicious that Dolores is a robot is my question.
I mean, especially because like,
given everything that they watch her do.
And she keeps saying like my world and like, they know that there was a catastrophic event at the park not too long ago. Like, I don't know. I feel like some of these people would be like, are there robots here? Like, you know, like did some of them get out? you know, and I also think that there's a lot of credulousness going into the notion of, yeah, so they built this huge park and they were very lifelike robots and whatever, but they only made them in the park. They never made them anywhere else, you know?
Like, yeah, don't worry.
Like, it's like when they cloned Dolly the sheep years ago, they totally cloned a human, and there's a 30-year-old person living in a bunker under Arizona or something right now. Of course there is. Of course there is. You know,
who did they clone, Richard?
I don't know. Some you know, pipsqueak soldier or something. I don't know.
You think it's a soldier? You don't think they did a FAMO?
No, maybe.
Who would have been like a late 90s famous person? Maybe it's, well, is that too soon to say like Princess Diana? Anyway, what a downer, Joanna. Yeah, it's interesting to me. One silver lining to that is the Liam's friend, whose name is Rodney, I believe, who is an awful sort of Logan-esque rich douchebag. Nonetheless, seems to be the person the most sort of potentially clued into the fact that Dolores is that there's something up with Dolores, right? Because like the Laura figure that she was pretending to be was supposed to have died, right?
Yeah.
They're all consoling Liam because she's allegedly dead or whatever. And then she's not dead, and Ronnie's girlfriend like thinks it's the drug she's taken is why she's seeing this Laura character. But he looked like, what the heck? And then she tapped the like nucleus accumbens, mm-hmm. like part of her head as she like walked past him and stuff like that. And it's just sort of like, I feel like if anyone is going to figure this out, it's going to be that guy first. Honestly, like he might be like cynical enough or has spent enough time in the park to figure it out. I don't know.
Yeah, no. And also like Rafi Gavron is not like that unknown of an actor that like maybe they are going to give him more to do. You know, maybe that's why they cast him.
Yeah,
I don't know. So
exactly.
Yeah.
You don't go from A Star is Born to two scenes in Westworld, bro.
And he's in the HBO family. Anyway. He's on Rome, you know?
Oh, that's right. I loved this. There's this great, you know, cover of The Weeknd's Wicked Games that plays during the scene and during the fight between Stubbs and Dolores, which I also really loved. I swear I'm not just like trying to like, you know, disingenuously talk about only the things I really liked, but there is a like, there's a lot visually and sort of like action based that I did really like in this episode. Like the way the William delusions are edited together, the Musashi Maeve fight and the Dolores and Stubbs fight and the whole like setting of the party. That's all stuff that I think was done really, really well, in this episode. But it's just other stuff like the little bank heist that they pull off before where like Caleb has this like blood transfusion, has to pretend to be someone. That just feels completely inert to me. Like I don't feel the tension. I don't feel, I usually get really excited and love a heist, and I just did not feel that in any way. So that's, you know, there's a lot of like, huh, to go with these moments of excitement or beauty. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I am. All right. So do you have like, what are some of your biggest questions rolling forward from this episode? Like, what do you most like want to know in episode 5, and most, what do you sort of like most want to see in episode 5?
I would like to figure out how they're going to, I'd like to see how they're going to use Maeve going forward, you know, because it can't be this constant process of her trying, failing, getting revived by Serac, you know, like I'm just wondering like how long she's going to kind of be in his pocket. I know he has a certain technological control over her, but, so I'll be curious about that. And I'm also curious, like I said, kind of at the top of the episode, like, how the other Doloreses are going to interact with each other, you know, because if they're all going to be in lockstep, like the kind of two more, like, you know, just dutiful soldier ones, or if they're going to be more like, the Tessa Thompson, Charlotte version of Dolores and seem to have their own sort of like dawning personality and agency. I think that this reveal sets up an interesting dialogue potentially about like our notions of self and multiple selves in one body and one mind, you know, even though they're in different bodies. But yeah, so I'm curious to see where they go with that idea, because they've introduced a big thing. We've never seen this before. So I hope that they don't kind of just, you know, ignore its bigness, I guess.
Yeah, I guess I think I had assumed a couple things. I had assumed that it would be Dolores who would have an awakening about humanity that would change her mind, but like via Caleb, and that might still happen. Like she said sort of overtly that like she, you know, he surprised her and stuff like that. But, you know, I have to wonder sort of to the tune of what we were talking about before, I have to wonder if Charlotte's experience with Nathan, her son, and stuff like that is really going to be the more deciding factor in terms of changing a host's mind about humanity and pitting one Dolores against the other, and really undermining Dolores's thesis of what humanity is if, you know, one of her own copies has a change of heart about it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious about Dolores and Maeve, because I actually don't see that. I definitely don't see them being antagonists till the end on the season. We only have, you know, we're exactly halfway through the season, so we have 4 more episodes to go. But I'm trying to parse more carefully sort of what Musashi said to her. He said, I don't want Serac. I can't let Serac, like, control you against us, basically. But to me, that doesn't mean, like, Dolores doesn't want Maeve there or Maeve can't be there. It's she can't have Serac controlling Maeve. And I feel like a Dolores-Maeve team-up feels so inevitable this season. So I'm curious to see how the cards align for that. And if there is an inevitable cataclysmic event that everything is heading towards, any way in which that wouldn't be Dolores responsible for it, because that's the kind of tricksy thing that I'm on the lookout for from Westworld. Like, how could it be, in what way could it be Bernard or something else that's, you know, him trying to prevent something actually causes something in the end, you know?
Right.
That seems likely. All right. Well, that is it. We have, like I said, not seen any future episodes, so we don't know what's a coming, but we will be here to talk about it. Thank you guys very much for your emails. Stillwatchingpod@gmail.com is where you can find us. Until then, Richard, where else can folks find us?
I'm hoarding my goo. My host goo. But importantly, I will be doing that from the safety of my own home. And I'll also be tweeting from Rylaws and covering a variety of, we're getting down to the barrel, in terms of what I'm covering, random streaming things. But we're making do. How about yourself?
Yes, I will be, bidding on my favorite prostitute for sale, because I don't know if you heard, but all proceeds go to charity. So mm-hmm. It's for a good cause. And so you can find me doing that, or you can find me on vanityfair.com, or you can follow me on Twitter @JoeWroteThis. And until next week, enjoy your goo, and we will see you for episode 5.
These violent delights and violent ends.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness, really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.